Thank you for joining us and welcome to another edition of Answers Network. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza. For those of you that have been listening, sending in questions and comments, thank you so much. And please spread the word that every Monday from 11 a.m. to noon Pacific time, this show will bring on special guests that can inspire, educate, and in some cases, entertain, while bringing answers and options to making our lives happier, healthier, and more successful. And I'd really appreciate it if you could all do me a big favor. Please forward one of our shows to your social media group and to someone you know who can benefit from a particular subject. This is one powerful way that we, together, can make a positive difference in the world. Now, are you ready? Because if you are, if you're ready to take control of your career, your life, and destiny by becoming an elite performer, stay with us as we learn how. In fact, text your friends with this one. Because as fast as things are changing, especially in how businesses are run successfully, we're going to get a peek into the strategies that many people have paid very large amounts of money to learn. We're going to preview our guests' one-on-one executive coaching strategy outlined in his upcoming book. By the way, it's released tomorrow. Now, the book is Elite Performance for Managers. And we're going to discuss his actionable guide consisting of three pillars he developed for elite performance in any industry. Not only any industry, but in any part of your life. So joining us with three decades of experience in international finance, Talbot Stark is the visionary founder and CEO of Exec Pathfinders, which stands as a beacon of transformation in the realm of executive coaching worldwide. Now, throughout its proprietary elite performance pillars methodology, which we'll talk about a little later, Exec Pathfinders nurtures professionals in reshaping their minds, careers, and destiny. Talbot's academic accomplishments include a CFA, an MBA from the University of Cambridge Judge Business School, and a Bachelor of Science in Industrial Engineering from the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Talbot, welcome to Answers Network.
Alan, thank you. Really excited for the people joining. And really, my purpose, and we'll discuss that, is effectively over my 40 years from my days in the military to international finance, really trying to embellish and say, here are the key lessons I learned. More importantly, here's all the things I wish someone would have told me along the way that you can benefit. It took me 40 years of trials and tribulations to try to codify that. And that's what I'm really excited about. And my aim, and we were talking before the show, as Alan's had a chance to read the book, to really give a practical step-by-step guide that you can implement. So my goal, and hopefully we'll get into that, Alan, but thanks for having me as a guest today. And thanks everyone for joining us.
Well, you know, and I mentioned, you know, in the introduction, the three pillars. And one of the things that I liked was is that, you know, in breaking things down like this, it made it much easier for me as the reader to think about, oh, this is an area I think I should get a little more help. And I kind of would focus in that area, which I think is great, because in this day and age of everything's happening so quick, I don't always have time to read everything. So as I'm reading, I'm going, yeah, okay, this is an area, spend a little more time. And I kind of skimmed through some areas I thought maybe wasn't, you know, as big a thing for me. But I want you to know that I think that's a great idea and a great fit for today's world.
I couldn't agree more. And you know, one of the things that if we extrapolate that for the moment, and I talk about this in the book. So for the audience, you know, the three pillars, it's first and foremost, being a better you. The best ROI, the best return on investment you can achieve is investing in oneself. And here, the reality is that, and I want to be candid in my book, first, I don't have all the answers, but I've done my best to at least give you tips and lessons learned that I think will be successful for you and your career, your happiness if you apply them. As Alan and I were talking about, family is a big component because a career is not just you, right? There's many actors involved. But my point here, which you kind of just triggered for me, scientific evidence, I was a helicopter pilot in the U.S. Army. So I used to think that I was a very good multitasker. Mm-hmm. We had a webinar last week with an F-16 active duty fighter pilot in Italy. However, here's the reality. The cold, honest truth is the human brain is not designed to be optimal with a continued bombardment of information. So just a little takeaway, but for people that are listening, here's one thing, and the scientific evidence is strong. So first, my assumption that I was some excellent multitasker was categorically wrong. That's not the optimal way your brain works. So unplugging, you know, making sure that there's times when you have important things to consider, twofold. Unplug, you know, turn the phone off, wait till you hear the end of the show to turn your screens off, but really getting that time away. And it's amazing when you put your brain at ease and then focus it and saying during this time, I'm not going to have any interruptions. Here's what I want to focus on. Your ability, your cognitive processes are accelerated. So just not to divert too much, but that's something that's missed today because we become dependent. And a lot of the news media is focused on kids, right? We see kids, we shake our heads. I have two young adults, but that's not the only ones that are captive to their phones. It applies to probably many of us here. So just one practical takeaway, if you want to be elite, you need to unplug once a while, get perspective, and really focus at the task at hand. So just a little free advice there, something I really care about.
Well, and it's so funny that you would jump on that one first because of the fact that that's one of the things that grabbed me the most is this whole thing of thinking that I can multitask. And I have a different terminology that I've used in the past. For those of us close to my age, they'll get it, but it's spinning pie plates. And I would say my problem will be that I'm spinning too many pie plates. And for the younger people, there used to be variety shows where at some point in time, they bring a guy on, he'd start at one end of the stage, there'd be a table, he'd start spinning that pie plate and he'd go all the way down and he's spinning about 20 of them. By the time he gets to the 20th one, that first one is wobbling and just about to fall. And he runs back as fast as he can. And he spins that one. And that's my visual telling me I'm spinning too many pie plates. I have to take some of them and set them down or they're all going to fall. So, but when I was reading the book and I was going, okay, he's speaking to me now. Okay. about trying to do too many things, about the same thing about, you know, turn things off, you know, back away from a lot of the technology when you can. Anyway, they hit home. Now, the other part having to do with the fact of the first pillar, I love that you talk about managing you. Okay, I think many of us need to look inward first before we're in a position to lead others. So share with us some of your managing you strategies to become a better you.
Sure. No, thanks. Thanks, Alan. That's the foundation, right? So this should be inspirational in that, honestly and candidly, there's so much that we can do. Granted, there's a lot of things we don't control in life, but many people, or I should say few people, truly maximize the things they do control. So that's, you know, kind of me pounding on the table in a good way, because if you're going to have personal accountability, if you really, truly want to be elite, first and foremost, it's that person you see in the mirror every day. You can work for a young, dynamic company. You can be your own CEO or founder. You can work for a Fortune 500. You can work for the government, et cetera, et cetera. You can have amazing managers. I've been blessed with many in my career. You can have HR partners. You can have mentors. You can even have a coach. But here's the most important thing. You and you alone are responsible for managing your career. So first, you have to own it. Now, what do we need to do? So one of the things I do with any executive client I take on, I ask them respectfully to be a lawyer, meaning for the next 2 weeks, with no conscious bias, simply denote where you spend your time and how you spend it every half an hour. Spreadsheet, old school, writing, whatever suits you. If you want to be elite, do that from the moment you wake up. And without fail, 2 weeks of observations, we'll get back on a call like this and the patterns you see and what things, depending on whatever context, I understand many of us in the corporate world, there's meetings we host or meetings we have to go to. But here it's the first goal, and we were talking about this before the show, the first goal is that today, laudably, people are focused on the task and helping the firm, and the brain helps you because there's an objective and you work and you achieve it. The endorphins kick in and you're doing good. But here's the caution sign. Here's a yellow flag if you're on the racetrack, is that first and foremost, you can't be 100% task or tactically focused, even though, and here's the tricky part, and I never wanted to put good people in harm's way in their career, meaning these are well-intended, dutiful, hardworking people, but no one's tapping them on the shoulder saying, pause. You need to unplug, get perspective, and spend 5 to 10% of your time strategically managing your career. Now, let me link a couple things because I'm going a bit fast. So I would, for me, the most valuable asset we have is time. We're all allotted the same. Every day we get 24 hours. Alan, for you, for me, our loved ones. So going through where do we spend our time and really critically analyzing that for a two-week period, you can make changes. The first thing I would advocate if you want to be elite is carve out 30 minutes a week twice to find that time when you can ideally unplug and really strategically get some distance and manage your career. So it's adjusting your schedule. Now, digging a little deeper and being a better you, most of us can probably know we're February in 2024. If you're a fiscal calendar year, you know your new budget, you know the number, you know your targets, you know all these things. Understood. But not everyone, and I have it on my phone, what's your personal goals? I call it the life performance matrix, meaning what's the metric? How can I assess personally where I'm spending my time if I don't know what's important to me and I define that? I.e., you can be the best marksman. If you can't see the target, you're not going to hit it. So, and I try to keep things simple. I love the work that MIT does, and it was quite consistent with the things I learned in the military, that on average, most people cannot remember more than 3 to 5 things related to a specific topic. So the quick homework assignment, and Alan, you've probably seen it in my book, and I'll be open with everyone here in the audience. Define those things in your life, those three to five areas that are most important to you. I'm not prescriptive. It's just think about it. For me, I'll share. For me, it's my faith. It's my family, my fitness, and my career. And then those are the rows, if you will. And then next to that, the next column, I have 3 to 5 objectives, kind of on a 6-month rolling basis for those 4 things. And it's just trying to keep it simple, trying to minimize the number of plates you have in the air, because it's great on the talent show for those that remember back in the TV days. But for your life, I believe focus yields results. So if you're starting to put things together, you know, understand where you spend your time, take a deliberate action to, if it's important to you, then take time to manage your career. 2 half-hour segments. If you're not investing that amount of time in your career, I would question you, how successful do you think you're going to be if you don't spend any time to do it, right? Just like my putting game, Alan, when we get out and play, you seem like a nice guy. My drive is respectable, my short game, but you may or may not say something, but my putting game needs some work. But how realistic is it for me to think my putting game is going to miraculously improve without any time? Same thing for your career. Yeah. So I said a lot there, Alan. So let me pause and I'll hand it back over to you.
Well, and I think it's a great point that many of us don't put the amount of time that we should. So at times, and I know you mentioned the fact that you talk about that there's science behind a lot of this. So you've done a lot of research. How much time do most people actually dedicate to their career? And how much time should we be doing it?
Sure. Now, good questions. And again, with the companies or clients I work with, first and foremost, there's a big difference between knowing and doing. Almost everyone, as we're talking, good points, Talbot, multitasking, plate spinning, Alan, right? As we were talking, yeah, you know, I know I should spend time planning. I'm too busy, right? Yeah. And there's always a pushback, or you don't know my schedule, or any of the various excuses, right? But again, removing emotions, the only thing I can say is, how likely are you going to improve if you're not dedicating any time? And here is a little, I think, invaluable lesson to just reiterate how important time is. I call it the 5-minute miracle.
Okay.
Meaning, unplug and set your phone or some timer for 5 minutes. Try to do this at a time in the day where it's a bit more peaceful. There's some calm in your life, and do what we mentioned before, unplug. And then focus on a topic. If you finish listening to us today and you want to say, you know what, I'm going to brainstorm just with myself the next 5 minutes of what are the important things in my life? What are the 3 to 5 categories that I want to focus on, right? And you hit that start button. And wait, and again, do it uncensored. Let brainstorm kind of, if you're writing or typing, whatever, or even audio, whatever works best for you. And when that 5-minute alarm goes off, you'll be amazed of what you can accomplish if you're focused. Again, back to the science, your brain, if you set it up this way, and the timer is important because it tells your brain, like, okay, I have a very specific purpose and I need to focus. I go through all that, Alan, back to your question, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you do it, and I guarantee if you do it the way I just described, you will be blown away of how much is up there if you give your brain a chance to focus. So again, with the career, I advocate a minimum of 5 to 10%. And again, I talk about this in my book. We have kids, families, elderly, everyone has a different construct in their life. But for me, I think it's achievable. Find that 30-minute segment. I did it twice a week. And then for me, what worked well, every Sunday, kind of after family activities, before dinner, I had an hour where I did everything I just told you. I went to my office, shut everything down. And that was, in the finance world, it was my mark to market. How am I doing? Professing something, knowing versus doing. You know what? Last week, we had a client issue. I wasn't feeling so well. A few things fell down. No problem. I am aware. I'm taking the time to manage my career. And now I'm going to decide on some deliberate actions that I'm going to shift consciously next week, where I need to focus more on my family. I was traveling all last week. So whatever that may be, your partner, your kids, whatever. So again, it's trying to do. Everyone on this call, I'm sure, has achieved significant success. It's like elite athletes. What's the difference between the 100th ranked tennis player in the world and number one? It's probably an infinitesimal different grip that serves their tennis at 100, their serves 105, and the next guy's 110 with a different slice or whatever it may be. And you can continue in every sport. So when I look at elite performance in our careers, it's the same mentality. Looking at the time you spend in your career, commit to making a small change in your schedule so you can free this process up. And if you do it consistently, right, I underline that, commit. If you're telling me you can only afford 15 minutes, I just try the 5-minute rule. Even 15 minutes is significantly better than zero, right? So exactly. My main message is find something practical, find something achievable, and then it's back to that person in the mirror. Hold yourself accountable.
I love it. And along these lines, let's talk about a balance a little bit. And from my standpoint, as somebody who has worked with parents, much of what you've been doing has been more so on the business side. So I found myself running into very, very high level business people who was spending zero time with their family. And I'll tell a quick story is that I had a gentleman whose son had run away and he'd been abusing drugs and so on. And I flew in to meet with them and went in, and he started immediately ranting about, he said, "Well, you're supposed to be the damn expert. So you tell me what the hell is going on in his head. I have given him everything and I have done this and I have done this and so on." And so, and he's going through just yelling, you know, about, you know, the fact that and he's ungrateful and da-da, and all these things and stuff. And I said, sir, I go, how many vice presidents do you have working for you? And he looked at me, he went, I don't know, 30? He goes, what the hell does that have to do with anything like that? And I said, you've just explained that you have given your son everything and that now at 15 years old, you have set some parameters because it got out of control. He goes, yeah, so? And I go, what would your 30 vice presidents do if you all of a sudden changed the rules on them? Would they leave? And he looked at me and I glanced over the corner of, at a corner of my eye, I could see his wife. And she went like this because I think she thought he was going to hit me. I mean, it was like she just thought nobody talks to him like this. But he, after he got through his rage and he went, okay, can you just find him? We'll work on that other stuff later. Can you just find him? But what I realized, you know, was that, you know, he has, you know, he's incredibly successful and he has 30 vice presidents working for him. But he knew nothing about what was going on in his 15-year-old son's head. So let's now talk about balance. And as you said, you know, faith, family, career, all of these things and how we can balance them to lead an optimal life.
No, Alan, thanks for sharing that, right? And with the person and the family you're having that discussion with, I am slow to make judgment because I think with good intent, much ill can be done, right? Mm-hmm. I'm sure that person was in that thought process. I'm providing for my family. I'm working hard. I want him to Absolutely. Go or him or her to go to school. I'm providing the things I didn't have. Again, all well intended. And I'm sure I don't know the person, but I'm sure in this thought process, those are laudable things to do and probably sacrificing, right? Mm-hmm. So it's a little bit back to the why the life performance matrix, as I call it. And again, it's simple. It's just defining what's important to you. I have it right. If you were standing behind me, Alan, it's right on my wall here because I need these constant reminders. So I think, you know, the advice is, you know, almost back to what we're talking about in managing your career. And it's hard. I have a 21-year-old and 17-year-old, right? I'm not sure. I would say probably no one knows exactly what's going on in anyone's head, but it's almost the same principles. And I'm not a perfect father either, right? But I've made some choices to try to be congruent or, if you will, hold myself accountable. And again, you have to believe it, right? If I profess or I believe that I think my family is important to me, right? So then if it's back to where do I spend my time? And there's ways, okay, quality time or whatever, but there's ways, again, if this is important to me and I'm in control of my life, the executive that he's obviously a competent individual in the corporate mm-hmm. workplace. So it's like, if you make those decisions, I'm sure he has a secretary and I'm sure to see him or her, they have to have meetings. I doubt randomly there's no meetings booked and people just come and see. That probably doesn't happen, right? So it's kind of that same thing. If you need to try to, if you're the relationship with your children are important, then make that commitment to be flexible, but make a commitment on what's going to work with them, right? Try to find that dialogue. Some of the things we do with our family, this is the Stark family. You can make your own judgment, but we got a lot of people going a lot of directions, you know? So we try to have a little conference call. Maybe some of you might think that's ridiculous, but we're dynamic and going places. But again, I try to make it something that I know everyone knows how to use a phone. We find a common time and there's no excuse, right? Unless there's an emergency. So I think it's, you know, in sharing that story, Alan, it's deliberate actions, right? Take those, if the workplace, your success, your professionalism, your aspiration to be elite as a manager in the corporate world, take some of those same qualities. I'm sure If you're successful, you don't skip meetings. You don't show up late, right? Mm-hmm. It's no different with your family. If they don't see that commitment or prioritization, you know, no different than bosses that kindly continually cancel the opportunity when you want to have a meeting with them. How do you feel? And it's, you know, how does the other see oneself, right? So my advice is just actions speak louder than words, if that's helpful.
Oh, it's incredibly helpful. And as you were saying that, I was kind of thinking of like a catchphrase type of thing, which is, you know what, if as a manager, if you couldn't imagine yourself just skipping meetings, then don't skip your kid's ball game. Then don't skip their ballet recital. Don't skip those things either. Now, we're speaking with Talbot Stark. We are talking about his new book, Elite Performance for Managers. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back.
Conflict International are experts at uncovering the truth. Our specialist team has decades of experience in providing a range of bespoke investigation and intelligence services to companies and individuals. Whether you need professional screening or background checks of employees, due diligence of potential clients or business partners, asset tracing services, or surveillance, Conflict International has a rapid response team on hand to get you to the heart of the matter. Our key strength is in our global capabilities. We can tap into an extensive network of trusted professional investigators based in most jurisdictions worldwide, enabling us to go almost anywhere a case takes us. Conflict International has decades of experience with a diverse range of skills among our team, developed from backgrounds in military and security intelligence services, as well as practiced lawyers. Visit our website today at conflictinternational.com to find out more about our services. That's conflictinternational.com. Global reach, local knowledge.
We're speaking with Talbot Stark, and we are talking about his new book that is going to not just help you in your career, but it's going to help you with your life. Talbot, one of the things that I really liked in the book, because I hadn't thought about it before, which was you talk about delete delegation and replace with partnering. Okay, I think it's a great concept. And I realized that it's something that I've done naturally, but I never thought of it that way. So share how you came to realize this and the best way that people can implement it in their own life.
Sure. Thanks, Alan. So I think my experience in writing a book, it's been really interesting, but my aim was I needed to let my guard down, right? There's colleagues I've worked with for two decades that'll be reading my book or seeing this interview. But I wanted to be genuine and authentic. So I'll tell you that I would say in the first, decade or so of my career, I struggled with delegation, right? Not that I didn't understand what it meant. And I also knew implicitly I can't do everything. So I was putting, if you will, my own ceiling on my career advancement. But however, even understanding the consequences, I struggled. Why did I struggle, at least for me, is that how could I manage the quality control and you're kind of short these options. If I'm running the group or the team or whatever, if I'm responsible, I'm responsible for the quality. So how do I mitigate delegating, but ensuring that we have consistent quality control? And it was, I would say, kind of more in the mid part of my career where I talk about a moment of truth. At this time, I was, managing a global sales force and be in my office. I was in finance. And it would happen, unfortunately, good working, earnest people would depart for some other opportunity. But before they were leaving, my assistant would say, Joe wants to see you, before he leaves. So you can anticipate what the meeting most likely, I call it the moment of truth, because at this point we tried to retain the individual, went through all those steps, but they made their decision. So it's a social moment, if you will. So there'd be the ubiquitous, really, thanks, depending on maybe I hired them or part of the hiring process or we work together. So, hey, really, thank you for the opportunity, your support, love the time at the bank. But we can all anticipate the but, right? So all the platitudes, and then there's the but. And this is what troubled me. Honestly, 8-9 times out of 10, whatever that answer was, is like, in a realistic time frame, we could have accommodated that for someone we wanted to keep. So how did we get to this point? And that's where I realized, back to unfortunately that person in the mirror, you know, I was to blame in that the quality of the dialogue, that somehow my team, myself, I didn't put this person in a position of comfort to be honest. We never understood or had a forum where something maybe, Alan, to your point, very important to their family. I have a couple of clients dealing with these things right now. Family is paramount. If I never set up a situation where, like, how's everyone doing, you know, and so on. Well, my mother-in-law is really ill. It's causing a lot of stress. If I never open up that opportunity, they keep it in. They're focused on their job. They're a good employer. But at some point, there's a fracture, right? And maybe just what we were talking about, Alan, they're truly trying to put their family first. So they're at odds. They don't feel comfortable to talk to Talbot about the situation. So they see the only choice is going somewhere else, right? So I said, boy, how do we, you know, this is, in fact, again, looking, being honest with myself, I'm like, okay, well, as the commander in the military or the manager in the workplace, I'm failing because I'm not investing the time. I'm not putting people in the situation of comfort to be honest, because all of us have these conflicts. Children, as you're just, you know, talking about, mm-hmm. parents, all these different things. So I call it my golden decade in my career to try to pivot and make a conscious choice. First, as you probably saw in the book, ask and then listen. A little role play, right? We can change the context. But to give you an example, so it hopefully comes home. February, let's assume we're calendar year, and Alan, you just saw, we came out of the town hall, and budgets for our team are up 25% in revenues, top line. And there's no way we're going to achieve this unless I really ensure everyone on the team is leaning into their strengths. So listen, right. Alan, I just want to know from you, you know, you have amazing international network. I think you know, from my observation, that's a strength. But tell me, Alan, how do you think you can best contribute to the team's success? Where are you most passionate? And please feel free to include things that you never felt before, because we didn't ask that you wanted to contribute, but you just didn't feel it was your place. So, you know, and then it's that pause, right? Then right. It's not selling or delegating, or here's your Midwest region and it's going from 100 to 120, all these things that are very rote and laudable in some ways. But if I'm being clear, as I call it, it's giving your team member, your partner, and those words are selected purposefully, giving them the microphone or the pen. You write down, so many things have changed. You know, Alan, could you just write down what you think your job description is? And every time you mm-hmm. do that, you'll find out they're doing a lot of different things, right? Let's talk mm-hmm. about that, or I'm passionate about this, or simply just asking them, where are you best aligned? So what do you achieve? There's a few things. One, if you sincerely ask this, don't ask it a few weeks before the bonus. Don't ask it a few weeks before the review, because you're not going to have genuine dialogue. Be yep. purposeful if you can, even out of the workplace. It's a morning breakfast or whatever puts someone at ease. Yep. And obviously, hey, you share in your style, share your own struggles. For me, I can tell you, I had a lot of energy, tenacity. I lived and breathed the client business. But I needed in lockstep a COO who could implement the processes to hold me accountable, to hold us accountable so we could achieve what we were saying. That was a weakness. Here's where I could lean in. And I had a great manager that worked with me. Like, these are the areas I need help. And I think these are my best skills. And if you follow that, most logical people, if I'm going to assert, if you're asking me, Alan, as my boss, Talbot, what do you want to do in 24? Most logical people are going to assert things that they feel passionate about, things they think they're good at. Now, I'll be clear. You as a manager, you're still underwriting that objective. You're still setting the quality standard. But by truly asking, if it's genuine, hopefully you remove the resentment. Like, you never asked me. And if you never ask, I'm never going to tell, right? So you remove that standstill. Second, hopefully you appreciate. So the metamorphosis then as a manager, if my hands come through, is each person on your team, respectfully, is a unique puzzle piece. So now it's like, okay, Alan is dynamic. He has international skills. He likes to travel, whatever this may be. How do I align, you know, the different people on the team such that I'm listening to them, where they're passionate? I now as a manager, well, how do I, Alan fits in here. We're going to pivot Sue to here, whatever it may be. But it's a just a really different challenge. And it really removes the delegation, because delegation implies authority. And again, asking, saying, here's what we are trying to achieve. We as a team, you know, we're trying to grow 25%. And where would you like to lean in? And then the next thing, back to your one-on-ones, yeah, is that's a critical thing, because it can be awkward. And sometimes, as I talk about in my book, it can be most awkward with people you're closest to, because we play pickleball on the weekends, but I'm the boss, all these kind of things. But then the dialogue can be like, Alan, you told me, hey, you really want to expand the European markets for us. That's great. You know, I know you're capable and so on. It's been a little slow in the start of the year. How can I help you? What do I, you know, what do we need to do? So it's one, they can gain an appreciation from you because it's things they said they want to do and you're trying to help. So I'll pause there, but hopefully that makes some sense.
It makes great sense. And interestingly enough, we have a question that is coming in from a Fortune 500 or a manager at a Fortune 500 company. And I'm also looking at our time. We're going to take another break in about 3 minutes. So let's get this one in and see. This one says, I've been a manager at a Fortune 500 company for over 10 years. How does the book approach the often delicate topic of managing upwards, and what practical advice does it provide for navigating complex power dynamics? And this is from Jonathan in New York City.
Jonathan, excellent question. So I'll try to squeeze in a couple things before the break here. So here, first and foremost, for a manager, my mindset is, in an ethical context, doing everything you can to help him or her be successful. Back to visualization, that means your boss, him or her, is in a little wood cart and you're steadfastly pushing them up the hill. But here's the key, not in a self-boasting manner, but in an altruistic manner. Now, the next iteration of this, right, is simply be amazingly predictable. I have 10 essential steps to improving dynamically the relationship with you, or i.e. managing your manager. In the world of unknown, no different than I was talking about before, being a better you, rest assured your manager probably has more unknowns than they did in the past. So it's really, again, it's back to accountability. How can you consistently be on time, consistently deliver the budget? And probably more important is also avoid surprises. Be that person that there's big expectations, first quarter, you're going to close this large deal. And you're looking out over the horizon and you knock on your boss's door or email or whatever the communication is saying, you know, Alan, we're really trying hard, but I wanted to bring this to your attention. I'm concerned that we may not close this deal in Q1. And I wanted to, you know, confide and give you the update and see, you know, what strategies you could, you know, help us. Because I don't think, you know, if you're counting on this, we had 100% probability in the funnel we're going to close. That's not the situation. So it's really, again, being predictable in every manifestation thereof, right? Be the eyes and ears, form, you know, a core area of competence. And this is the thought process. You're at a Fortune 500. So Jonathan, what are your boss's goals? You probably know those. Then what are your boss's goals? And then we haven't talked about your personal brand, but who you are, being true to you. I call it the right angle rule. And then how do you purposefully make sure the things you're leaning in on, being a partner with your boss, not only help your boss, but help your boss's boss. So that's a super compressed answer. Maybe we can go into it more after the break, but I would just stress two words: amazingly predictable. And it's your own personal accountability. Do you know, back to the last thing I'll mention, on the Sundays, for me, it was my personal accountability of what I achieved. And I would, in bullet point format, send that to my boss every Sunday. Here's what we did. Here's things I'm looking to do next week. Here's a couple things I need to talk to you at some point, right? And every boss is different. You got to find the cadence, but don't underestimate how busy they are. That succinct message is like, okay, for him or her, they know Monday, whatever your role is, like this is a quick snapshot, or in the military, we call it sit rep of what's going on. And I'll go to our commercial break and we can pick up more after the break.
That sounds great. And so when we come back from this break, I want to shift. We're going to be following a question that you answered for someone who's been 10 years in a position. I want to go into some advice that you'd give for somebody that's maybe just starting their career or venturing into a new one. So we'll tackle that when we come back. You're listening to or you're watching Answers Network. Having a teenager at risk who is going through a traumatic experience can be difficult on parents, siblings, and all who are working with that young person. No family should have to go through this process alone. West Shield Adolescent Services is here to ensure you don't have to. Many of the psychologists and psychiatrists we work with have spoken about the stress families go through. Not just the young person, but the parents needing to get their child to a program where they can get the help they need. West Shield aims to lessen that stress. Every case goes through a thorough intake process with one of our knowledgeable, compassionate intake coordinators. We want to know the likes, the dislikes, and the fears of each child. This important information is taken into consideration when choosing the best suited team member for each individual teenager. West Shield agents come from all different walks of life, giving us a diverse group of team members to ensure a personalized, compassionate experience for every teenager. This allows us to make certain every young person we work with gets to the chosen program in the best possible state of mind. We contacted over 600 of the youth we've worked with in the past to see where they're at now. 97% of these individuals told us how much their lives had improved, that they had better relationships with their friends and families, had gone on to marry, have kids, and were now using the skills they learned in their program to raise their own children. Our role of transporting at-risk teenagers is a vital step in the process of ensuring a youth's ability to thrive in their new environment, and is a role we don't take lightly. The recovery process can be a long one, but like any journey, it started with a single step. And we're back. We are speaking with Talbot Allen Stark, and the book is Elite Performance for Managers. When we went to break, the question was, what advice would you give to someone just starting their career or venturing into a new one?
Sure. So I think just starting your career, it's a difficult transition. If you're coming from the university world, demanding, but it's a different structure. There's a syllabus. You've been doing it for 4 years. Lots of pressure. But in the work world, depending where you're entering, most likely it's going to be a whole new different vocabulary, almost like learning a foreign language. And what I've experienced, and I've had the good fortune of working internationally, seeing some of the best and brightest out of universities from around the world. So no doubt on the academic pedigree, it's there. But communication, hopefully if you're picking up a key theme, that's at the entry level of your career all the way up to the more senior level of your career, never underestimate that. So I think the challenging part sometimes when you're young in your career is you get your first deliverable. Maybe you understand about half of it. You're probably doing better than most because it's intimidating. You're sitting with your project manager, or your boss, or their boss, or you're getting the brief, and the inclination is you want to accommodate and appease. So it's yes, Alan, I'm on it. I walk out and I don't really understand everything, but I displayed a good attitude. Again, you have to get the EQ awareness is probably you know, first and foremost, of just really understanding. Again, those situations going to require kind of reading different people you don't know. But here's my first advice. Maybe there's some peers, some people closer to you. Have that debrief. You know, I'm supposed to do this project or evaluation for a company. What are the techniques you use? Really making sure that you understand the mission. And then the next part is keeping your boss updated. And again, you have to find the right rhythm in something that some of you may raise eyebrows, but I really believe in modeling, meaning really taking note to the specific context or how people on emails. Some people want the bottom line up front. They just don't have much time. Some people want you to stop by your office. Again, I don't know the medium. You need to reach out, hopefully with some colleagues that can help you, but figure out a way to keep your manager apprised of how you're doing. I've had it happen to me, unfortunately, too many times where well-intended people young in their career, they're working hard and I'm busy or traveling. And then I'm looking for that deliverable. I land in wherever. And when it comes, that's the first time I've seen it in 4 weeks. It's so far off the mark that that's not a good situation, right? So it's making sure, find the right way, you know, be courageous enough to ask that. Alan, just what's the most effective way, time efficient way I can keep you updated on my project? You ask that question, and it doesn't come natural, right? You're not challenging your boss. Hopefully they're going to respond in that, whatever it may be, keep your project manager briefed, or, hey, send me whatever it may be, ask that question. So at least you're cognizant of knowing it's important to keep the people asking me to do this informed. And you're new in your career. Every company has its own culture. How do they, you know, format? What's the steps? Are you proving a physics formula where they want to see all of the work? Or are they happy to get to the, you know, these things? Again, it's intimidating. But my main point here, early in your career, make sure you understand the mission. Find the combination of peers and then ask your manager, what's the best way to keep you informed of the progress?
And what I get from that is that be it in your personal relationship or be it in your business relationship, communicate.
It's communicate, and then the EQ has to be high too, right? So it's a hard thing, and again, I have empathy, you know, young in your career, because you don't want to be bothersome and so on. So definitely don't give them an update every hour on the hour. That's maybe too much, but communicate and then kind of find that rhythm. But that's it. Find that effective communication that's going to kind of work best for both you and your manager.
I love it. And I wish that we had more time. So what I do want to do is, what is the best way that people can get a hold of you? Best way that people can get a hold of the book? And I know that you're doing something special for people that, you know, that buy it tomorrow, you know, or that order it tomorrow, because tomorrow is the launch date. I know you're doing something special. Share with that, because I love what you're doing.
Sure. Thanks, Alan. So there's a couple ways of getting a hold of me. Our firm is Exec Pathfinders. You probably see it on the screen, but it's execpathfinders.com. You can see our website with our contact email, which is the same, execpathfinders@gmail.com. I am out there on social media, predominantly in LinkedIn. If you check out Talbot Stark, I actually have a live LinkedIn event tomorrow, 9 a.m. Pacific time, noon out in the East Coast, for the announcement of my book with a really neat guy from Silicon Valley, Ken Burke. So we've teamed up on some things, and I'm a veteran. We didn't talk about too much about my time in the military, but it's a special place in my heart for the Wounded Warriors Project. So tomorrow, with my publisher, Effectively Books, are discounted about 50%. So $9.95 for a paperback, $15.99 for a hardcover. And every book sold tomorrow, I'm going to make a donation to the Wounded Warriors Project, because it's just a special place in my heart, and it should hopefully, you know, be inspirational for all of us, because those days that I feel sorry for myself, it helps me get a bit of perspective, because there's people that are, you know, insurmountable challenges and they're achieving those. So that's how you get a hold of me. Tomorrow, if you know anything about Amazon, it's all about momentum. Again, I genuinely think the book will be valuable. It's step-by-step and practical. So if you're moved and want to help change your life and your career, and maybe for others, go on to Amazon. It's Elite Performance for Managers.
Yes. And again, it's not just a book for business managers. It helps with everything. It's going to help manage your life. Talbot, thank you so much for coming on. And thank you for everything that you're doing. Again, people ask me, they go, you know, why do you do this show? And I said, because I want to bring on people that are making a positive difference in the world. And this is how you're doing it. And I much appreciate it.
Thanks, Alan. Likewise. Thanks for having me, and wishing everyone best on their journey, and start applying some of the things we talked about today.
All right. And for everybody, be with us next week when we're joined by Mary Jordan as she discusses her new book, Dodging Dementia and Understanding MCI and Other Risk Factors. And I want you to know this is a second edition of The Essential Guide to Avoiding Dementia. So I really want you to check it out. There's a lot of information out there about dementia that people aren't aware of. Some people think that it's just something there's nothing you can do about. That's not true, but be with us so that you can learn more. And visit our archives of past interviews at Answers Network, or just subscribe to the show through Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, SoundCloud, YouTube, Rumble, Spreaker, and so many other popular podcast platforms. If you like what you hear, please leave a review, leave a comment. This helps us, and I want you to know we greatly appreciate it. The next time you're on Instagram, Facebook, or X, please stop by our page, check out some of our latest posts. If you like them, please like us and spread the word. For everybody out there, be good human beings, and be with us again next week on Answers Network.
You're listening to Answers Network with Alan Cardoza, only on LA Talk Radio.